It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Fed Talk. I am Tony Vernetti from Feds, Federal Employee Defense Services, and I'm delighted to be filling in for the attorneys at Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And we have a real exciting show for you today. We're going to be taking a peek inside federal law enforcement and talking to two organizations, two very important organizations that support the law enforcement community in a variety of ways. So let me start by introducing our two guests. First, and in studio with me, we have Craig Floyd. Craig is the chairman and CEO of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund here in Washington, D.C. Craig, good morning. Good to see you. Welcome to the show.
Great to be back, Tony. Thank you.
And our other guest is Chris Schottmeyer. Chris is the Vice President for Agency Affairs with FLIOA, and that's the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. And Chris is on the telephone somewhere in New England, I imagine. Chris is on the telephone because he's old, nearing retirement, and he hates to travel. Just kidding, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for having me.
I know Chris is actually on the phone because he is in Boston, and he has to, after the show, he has to get up to New York City to attend an event for a fellow agent that we will be talking about a little bit later in the show. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes can save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. If you'd like to join our discussion today and speak directly to one of our guests, you can call our toll-free number at 1-877-936-9333, or you can always email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So today I want to highlight what both organizations really do for the law enforcement community, the Law Enforcement Memorial and FLIOA, what they really do to support and honor our dedicated law enforcement officers across the country. And Craig, let's start with you, if you could just introduce the memorial to our listeners.
But let me start with this comment, and that is that our friends at the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association have partnered with us for really about 30 years now. We've been working together. They're a member of our board of directors. And last night, in fact, and I have to give Chris a hard time, I got up and got on a 6 a.m. flight back to D.C. so I could sit here live in the studio with you, Tony. Meanwhile, Chris slept in, I'm sure, and is probably sitting in his hotel room right now, very leisurely, drinking a cup of coffee. And we had a great event last night up in Boston. I was with Chris. The Red Sox put on a Law Enforcement Appreciation Night and honored some heroic officers that hopefully later in the show we might be able to talk a little more about it. But Chris, I want to thank you for organizing last night's event. All the fans at Fenway Park were expressing their appreciation to the men and women in law enforcement, and that's a great sight to behold. And that's really a good segue to what we do as an organization. The National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund was founded in 1984. I am the founding CEO, and at that time I had the privilege of working for a congressman from New York City. His name is Mario Biaggi, and for 23 years before he came to Congress, he was a New York City police legend and wounded 10 times in the line of duty, the most decorated police officer in New York City history when he retired in 1965, then went on to serve 20 years with great distinction in the United States Congress. And one of the pieces of legislation among many that he authored and was enacted into law was to build a National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. at the request of a number of law enforcement professionals who felt that that was long overdue. The congressman, of course, agreed, given his history, and I had the good fortune to be his legislative assistant at the time. So we founded our group in 84. In 1991, fast forwarding, we dedicated the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. It's a beautiful 3-acre park here in the heart of Washington, D.C., a place called Judiciary Square. And on the walls of that memorial are the names of 19,981 American law enforcement officers, federal, state, and local. 1,057 federal agents inscribed on those memorial walls, by the way, the first being Robert Forsyth, a U.S. Federal marshal, killed in 1794. We've honored him and every federal agent since then. And we add new names every year, unfortunately, because on average about 154 officers in this country are killed in the line of duty. And now, as we've talked about many times on this show, we're in the midst of building the first ever National Law Enforcement Museum, which will be right across the street from that memorial. And once that museum opens in about 2 years, we'll finally be able to tell the complete story of American law enforcement and educate the American people about the vital role that law enforcement plays in this country and has played for hundreds of years.
And Craig, for our listeners who sort of may be unfamiliar where Judiciary Square is, some landmarks over there. One I know is the big National Building Museum is right there, and the federal courthouse there. You're kind of right there in the center of everything, right?
It is one of the three major historic landmarks in all of Washington, D.C. When they designed the city of Washington to be our nation's capital, Pierre Lafont and President George Washington actually walked the city streets. Not too many streets, actually, back in those days, but they walked the city and designated three major spaces to design around. One, the White House, which would be the seat of the executive branch of government. Two was the U.S. Capitol grounds. That would be the seat of our legislative branch of government. And the third site they identified was Judiciary Square, where our memorial and museum will be located. And that was to be the seat of our judicial branch of government, the seat of justice in America. And we figured what better place to put the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial and now the Law Enforcement Museum.
So it's interesting you mentioned the first officer that's on the wall there, the U.S. Marshal. What a lot of people may not realize is the U.S. Marshals is the oldest federal law enforcement agency that we have, is one of the very first. And that's a good segue, Chris, for me to allow you to introduce FLEOA, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, to our listeners. And then maybe you can talk a little bit about the partnership that you have with the Law Enforcement Memorial Fund as well.
Sure. My pleasure, Tony. And thank you for that. And Craig, last night was a great event. As you saw, it really resonated with the public there, and we'll certainly talk about it later in the show. Briefly, Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association was formed back in the early, I believe, 70s in New York City. That's the first chapter we had. It's grown to over 26,000-plus members, comprising 65 federal law enforcement agencies. And really, the Federal Law Enforcement Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association looks at a couple of major initiatives that we do. The first and most important one is providing legal services. We have attorneys on staff that respond to everything from shootings to proposed disciplinary actions. Unfortunately, the shootings seem to be increasing in number, with better than one shooting a week now. So obviously, it's very important for our FLEOA attorneys to be engaged in those services for the members. The other thing, too, is legislative. We do spend a lot of time on the Hill, educating Congress and working with Congress. We've also authored a number of bills, a few of which have made it through and actually become federal law. And that's critical, too, to, provide that kind of coverage for the members, but also, to work legislatively to get the message across. FLEOA is a great organization. I've been with FLEOA since the late 80s, and I think, as times go along here and it's becoming a lot more difficult with sequestration, it's very important for FLEOA to be engaged, Craig and Tony.
And I've certainly myself been associated with FLIOA for many, many years, even back when I myself worked for a federal law enforcement agency. And you know, I can tell you firsthand, you know, working with them, that they really are an outstanding organization that not only protects its members in terms of legal services, but tremendous amount of advocacy, both in the executive branch and the legislative branch. They really, really listen, and you guys are effective in getting things done. You also have a wonderful foundation in the FLIOA Foundation, but we're going to have to stop here and take our first break. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Memorial Fund and Chris Schottmeyer from FLIOA. We'll continue our discussion after this break and a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is Geico anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I am Tony Vernetti, and I am talking with Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. And we also have Chris Schottmeyer on the telephone from FLIOA, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association. If you have a question or comment, please give us a call. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333. Or you can always email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Craig, in the beginning, you talked a little bit about the Law Enforcement Memorial, how it got its start, where it's at, et cetera. There's more that the Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund does, such as the museum that you mentioned, the programs, events, puts out, you know, statistics and facts, information on safety. I was wondering if you can spend a few moments and talk about some of those other initiatives, important initiatives that you guys are involved with.
No, absolutely. In fact, just to summarize, our two primary missions as an organization, one is to increase public support for law enforcement in America. And we do that by commemorating and recording the service and sacrifice of federal, state, and local officers across this country. The second primary mission we have is to promote law enforcement safety, and we do that by sharing information about how law enforcement officers are being killed in the line of duty. So that is background. We've been involved in a number of initiatives over the years to accomplish the first mission, which is to increase public support. We built the National Memorial, as I mentioned, in 1991. That stands as a permanent, lasting, day-to-day reminder of the service and sacrifices that men and women in law enforcement make for this nation. There's about 900,000 sworn federal, state, local, tribal, and territorial officers in this country. About 100,000 of them are federal agents, by the way. And we work in many ways to try to honor that service and remind Americans about the tremendous sacrifices they make. For instance, in 1994, we had a law enacted by the United States Congress. A guy named John Porter, a congressman at the time from Illinois, actually authored this amendment at our request. It's to lower the flags of the United States to half-staff on May 15th, which is Peace Officers Memorial Day. There's only one other day on the calendar where the flags are automatically lowered to half staff, and of course that's Memorial Day to honor those in the military who've sacrificed their lives for our nation. Now we do it ever since 1994 for those in law enforcement who've laid down their lives protecting us here at home and sometimes abroad. And that was a great law, a wonderful tribute, one of the greatest tributes we can give any fallen American hero and their families. Another great tribute that we were responsible for, the United States Mint in 1996 issued a commemorative silver dollar, actually sold 140,000 of them, to honor the men and women in law enforcement who had died in the line of duty and to honor their families. And we actually sold that 140,000 with a $10 surcharge. We raised $1.4 million to help maintain the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. And that money has been invested. It now totals more than $2 million. And together with some private funds we've added to that, we now have a $6 million maintenance endowment fund set aside. So that memorial will always look as good as it did on the day that it was dedicated. A couple other programs that we're involved in. Officer of the Month. This honors the men and women who continue to serve. You don't have to die to become a hero if you're a law enforcement professional. We always like to remind people of that fact. Officers don't get paid to die, but they do get paid to take risks on our behalf. And a lot of them go out and do it every day. Sometimes officers, we honored a gentleman from Newark, New Jersey, a police department, a police detective for many years. Back around the year 2000, he decided to coach Little League football to give the disadvantaged youth in his community a better opportunity at success in life. And he teaches them life skills as a football coach, mentored so many kids over the years, hundreds of young people who are doing well today because of his leadership and volunteerism. And we honored him with our Officer of the Month. But we also honored a Maine State Trooper this past year, and he was with me last night with me and Chris up in Boston. In fact, we got to pay him a little extra tribute. He actually raced down the highway to try to stop a speeding vehicle going the wrong way on the interstate. And he actually saw the only opportunity to make the stop and to prevent innocent lives from being lost is to crash his vehicle into the car that was going the wrong way. That's exactly what he did. Thankfully, he survived. And the 88-year-old man who had become disoriented and was in the other vehicle survived as well. So those are just some examples of the Officers of the Month that we honor. And then finally, the other point I'll make is officer safety. That's such an important part of what we do. There are some great statistics that bear, telling at moments like this to wake people up to the sacrifice in the service. One officer is killed somewhere in America every 54 hours, and that's 154 officers a year on average. There are 60,000 criminal assaults against officers every year in this country, resulting in about 16,000 injuries. And then you add to that another 90,000 non-assault-related injuries. So more than 100,000 officers injured in the line of duty every year in this country. I'm very proud to say that we've been focusing on law enforcement safety for quite a while now. And last year, 120 fatalities nationwide. That's the lowest fatality figure since 1959. And this year, the numbers are even lower. And for the first time since 1944, I believe this year, we could see the number of officers killed in the line of duty in this country below 100.
Has there been a trend there with the amounts getting lower each year, or are you just seeing that more recently?
Well, let's put it in perspective. The 1970s, Tony, was one of the two deadliest decades in law enforcement history, the other being the 1920s. We were losing, on average, 230 officers each and every year. Since then, that number has come down. I mentioned the average for the last 10 years, about 154 officer fatalities on an annual basis. So better training, better safety equipment, more officers wearing bullet-resistant vests, more officers using less lethal weaponry, keeping them away from those hand-to-hand combat situations, tougher criminal justice, better emergency medical care. All of that has helped to reduce these numbers, and we're going to continue to focus in laser-like fashion.
And I'm always, a fact that constantly amazes me that reminds me every time I'm with you or do a show with you, is that the leading cause of officer death is vehicle-related.
it's shocking, I think, to most people to realize that, you know, historically, 56% of all the names on our national memorial are firearms related. Okay, so if you go back to the beginning of time, more officers have been killed by gunfire than any other cause of death. But the last 15 years, 13 of those 15 years, traffic-related incidents have been the number one cause for officers dying in the performance of duty. Automobile crashes, number one. Motorcycle crashes. Struck and killed outside of your vehicle. And by the way, let's get a plug in for the move over and slow down laws in this country. All 50 states now have a move over and slow down law. If you see an emergency vehicle on the side of the roadway, you are required by law to slow down and, if possible and safely, move over a lane. And that law is being enforced, and I hope that driving public is aware of that law, and you're going to save lives, because 16 officers a year on average are struck and killed while at construction sites, accident scenes, or directing traffic, or sometimes a traffic stop. That's a very dangerous situation for that officer.
So I'd like to just shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the other programs that you're involved with. We're going to talk about the Ride and Run to Remember in a little bit, and about some of the fundraising and how people can get involved. But just some of the programs, when you get at the core of what the Law Enforcement Memorial does, you know, when you talk about the wall, the names, it remembers. And there's something else that you all have started to do recently to remember, you know, events and things that have happened in law enforcement, called a Witness to History, right?
Witness to History is just a fabulous program that we started about two and a half years ago. The idea was this. We're building a national law enforcement museum, and we wanted to become a museum before the building was ever erected. I mean, you don't need a building necessarily to be a museum. We have a collection of artifacts that numbers over 17,000. Some really amazing items, such as Al Capone's bulletproof vest, all the DC serial sniper case, Elliot Ness's original credentials when he was an ATF agent, and then when he became part of the Department of Justice. You name it, we have it. Pat Garrett's gun and badge. He was the sheriff that killed Billy the Kid, you may recall. So those are just some examples. The RoboCop costume from the movie. I mean, we're going to have some fun with this museum in addition to honoring the serious aspects of law enforcement. But Witness to History was the idea was, let's get people thinking about the history of law enforcement, kind of prep them for this museum experience that they're going to have in about 2 years. So we had this guy, Jim Lavelle. You may not recognize the name, but he is in that iconic photo. Lee Harvey Oswald is being escorted out of the Dallas police jail, and he's being moved. And you see this deputy who was in a white hat and a white suit escorting. I mean, they were actually handcuffed together. Dallas police detective Jim Lavelle. And there you see Jack Ruby come up and stick a gun in Oswald's gut and pull the trigger. Jim Lavelle is now 92 years old, and he came to Washington. His daughter actually lives in Maryland. And he said, you know what, I'll come from Dallas to come visit you, and I'll share my story. We were going to do an oral history. And we said, well, wait a minute. You know, if Jim Lavelle's coming, it's not fair for maybe to have a private lunch one-on-one with him. Let's let him tell his story to a group of people, and let's film it. And sure enough, C-SPAN covered it. We had more than 100 people attend. And Jim Lavelle got up there for about 90 minutes and at age 92. And he told his story of the arrest of Oswald, the Jack Ruby conversations he had with both of them. It was fascinating. And since then, we've done so many others. We had some of the key participants from 9/11 come and tell their stories. We had three of the agents, ATF agents that were involved in the raid at Waco. They came and told their amazing story. A couple of them nearly killed during the shootout.
And having been involved in with the Waco litigation and things like that when I was at ATF, even to go to that event just to hear it from them, you know, was chilling, as if, you know, I had never heard this story before.
It was truly chilling, and we had a great conversation with all of them. We also have one coming up that's very pertinent to this discussion with Fed Talk. Robert Hansen, You may remember that name. He was one of the spies here at the FBI. He was a FBI special agent who had access to so much of the information about who our spies were and all the intelligence that we were gathering against the Soviet Union. And he shared that, and he became a paid spy of the Soviet Union. And a lot of agents on our side, CIA and FBI agents, mainly CIA, were killed as a result of his leaking these secrets. So we're going to talk about the Robert Hansen case on October 1st, and we're going to do it very appropriately at the International Spy Museum, which is co-hosting the event with us.
It's wonderful. We have to stop here for our second break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund and other federal law enforcement advocacy matters. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee, or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Bill Bransford, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Fed Talk brings you inside information on hot topics in the federal community. From the halls of Congress to federal agencies, get the latest on the laws, regulations, and activities that directly impact federal employees. Tune into Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, as we bring in the experts to bring you inside the issues.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and we're talking with Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, and we have Chris Schopheimer from FLIOA, the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association, on the telephone with us. And Chris, I want to start this segment with you. I know there's some important legal and advocacy work that FLIOA is involved with involving a DSS agent, which is the Diplomatic Security Service, Department of State agent, who is being prosecuted locally out in Hawaii. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with that case and what FLIOA is doing to assist and help.
Sure, Tony, not a problem. The DSS special agent, Chris Deedy, was working out in the Honolulu area with a partner, another special agent, and they happened to be in McDonald's one evening, late night, having some food, and came into an altercation with an individual from the area. And unfortunately, it escalated to the point where Chris, to actually save his partner, had to exercise the use of deadly force. And, we don't take that issue lightly in federal law enforcement, nor do law enforcement officers anywhere in the country. I receive extensive training in that. And, when that requires that, you make a snap judgment that you may have to use that kind of force and it may result in the loss of life. And in this case, that's exactly what happened. And unfortunately, out there, the local jurisdiction decided to charge Agent Deedy with murder, with homicide, and he was prosecuted recently out there in Hawaii, the Superior Court, and it was a hung jury. Unfortunately, now Agent Deedy is going to have to go through a second trial, unless there's some legal mechanisms that can be done to have that, venue changed. Most certainly, Agent Deedy will have to go through this again. And, the services we provide in FLIOA and through other, additional insurances, Chris has exhausted all of those. So this weekend, myself and President John Adler and several other national officers from Fleet Hour will be in New York City doing an auction to raise money for Agent Deedee's legal services. And we plan to host a number of those across the country over the next few months. And you know, we're there to make sure that Agent Deedee gets a fair shake. And you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, when you make that decision to use deadly force, and in this case it was his partner, you know, somebody obviously passed away here. And we're hoping now that, you know, the courts will obviously acquit him. But in the meantime, we have to raise the money to help Agent Deedee out.
Well, the case certainly resonates with another very recent case that I know Fleowa was very active and involved in down in the Virgin Islands, the Will Clark case, which thankfully ended in a dismissal. And I know Fleowa did a lot of wonderful work there to help and support and assist Will Clark when he was going through that tough time. For people who want to get involved and contribute and just get more information, where can they find that on the Fleowa website?
Yeah, they'll be able to go to the Fleowa website. We are going through a revision now with the Fleowa website, so I ask the listeners to be a little patient with it. You know, obviously we will have information on there. The other thing too is that we have chapters across the country, and people certainly can reach out for the local chapter. Our listeners, obviously a lot of them are Fleowa members, can get involved with this and you know, work through their chapters to provide support and to get the word out to the law enforcement community outside of the federal government, state, local, county, and other law enforcement entities. So, you know, it's going to be one that's going to, we're going to have to move on pretty quick, but at the same time, Tony, I think people can really make a difference here.
Well, and the one thing, you know, I just want to say before we leave this subject is what people, you know, need to appreciate, two things, is first of all, you're never really off the clock when you're a law enforcement officer, whether that's federal, state, local, whatever. You know, you're always, you know, looking and feel compelled to act in an emergency situation, you know. And then, you know, we have somebody who died. That's very tragic. But the other side of that you need to appreciate is, you know, law enforcement officers need to act quickly. You know, they do not have time to, you know, to think, you know, sort of everything through and every, you know, different ways they can handle things, you know, need to rely on their training, you know, and react in a very swift and effective way. Just like the officer that Craig just talked about, who crashed his vehicle, you know, into the other vehicle who was going, you know, the wrong way, you know, that could have ended a different way, you know, with, running into other cars and things like that. And you can very easily see folks coming in and trying to second guess that. So, you know, I just caution people before they rush to judgment to kind of take a step back and understand those two important points.
Yeah, and just quickly, Tony, you do raise a good issue there. And, you know, I guess I can say that, you know, I've been very lucky, knock on wood, and that's what I'm doing right now at the hotel room, that, you know, I've had a great career in the federal wildlife law enforcement side of it, you know, 33 and a half years. And, you know, the thing that I guess is that any time we could face a danger like that and have to make a spontaneous call on that, you know, if this in Fleo's mind was to go forward now and Agent Deedee was to be, you know, found guilty, this could have a tremendous ripple effect on the law enforcement community. I mean, one thing people, I think, have to understand is that, you know, bulk of the federal law enforcement agencies, not only are there uniformed officers out there, but there are also the special agents that are out there that don't wear uniforms. And, you know, I've often thought many times, well, how would I react if I go into a McDonald's or go into a bank and there's a holdup going on? They're not going to know who I am. And, you know, ultimately, if there was, you know, somebody that was going to take somebody else's life, execute a teller or something, I'm bound to react. And I just feel that it's really important that this case is like the Will Clark case, that we get a favorable decision on.
Well, and this will be, you know, I'll leave it at this, and I don't want to get too much into the legal stuff, but they're trained to react. And the most troubling part of this case is the decision by the State Department, not the scope, and put him in scope of employment, regardless of how you feel, how he should have acted, could have did something differently, whatever. You know, once he identifies himself as a federal law enforcement officer in the McDonald's, as he did, he steps into that law enforcement authority. And, you know, regardless of whether state thinks he was, you know, out of protocol or policy, you know, there is more of an institutional interest here to scope a federal agent in that situation for the very point you just made. You know, we're trained to react. We want them to react, you know, to prevent violence and death and, you know, and other serious stuff. You know, we don't want them to stop and pause and think, well, am I in policy? Am I in scope? Am I in this or that? You know, they should just react and we should scope them. If they get charged, they get charged. We'll let the criminal justice system handle it, but they still should be considered in scope of employment. I want to shift gears a little bit, and Craig, talk about an event that's coming up that's very important to the law enforcement community to raise funds for the memorial, and that's the Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember here in Washington, D.C., that's occurring the weekend of October 12th, right?
October 12th and 13th this year, we'll do our third annual Ride and Run to Remember. Now, this event actually started out as kind of a way, number one, to bring citizens and law enforcement together in a positive interaction. Here's a great statistic that makes that point, why it's so important. Only one out of five Americans has any direct contact with a law enforcement professional during the course of a year, and the majority of those contacts are traffic stops. All right. Not a positive interaction most of the time. So fewer than 10% of us really have any positive interaction with law enforcement. We want to find ways to bring the public together with the law enforcement professionals. And we thought, what better way to do it than have a run, a bike ride event where they can socialize, they can ride together, they can visit with one another, meet each other, realize that our cops are your neighbors. They're moms and dads with children, and they care about the same things you care about. And it's a wonderful way to accomplish that goal. And we've had great success already in the first couple years. This year is going to be bigger and better than ever. The other reason we started it, there was this great group called the Police Unity Tour. That since 1997, a group of law enforcement officers and a few survivors of the fallen who ride their bikes 300 miles from points in New Jersey and Virginia to Washington, D.C. over 3 days. They ride 300 miles, 3 days. At the end of the trip, they give us a big check this year, $1.8 million in donations to the Memorial Fund. So we love what they've accomplished, and we said, you know, let's try to replicate that in a broader fashion so that the citizens can also participate in a bike ride or a run event. And so that's the reason why the Ride and Run to Remember was launched 3 years ago. This year, we expect to have about 800 participants. You can still sign up. It's very simple. You go to our website, which is rideandruntoremember.org, and that's all those words spelled out, rideandruntoremember.org, and you'll be able to get all the information about the event and to sign up. It's a peer-to-peer fundraising event, so it does raise money for the Memorial Fund, a very large amount of money, actually. What you do is, like so many of us are used to now, if you say you're going to run a 5K, which is going to be on October 13th at the Memorial, or if you want to ride your bike 55 miles or 30 miles, take your pick on which length you'd like to participate in, and that's going to be out at National Harbor, a great spot out in Prince George's County, just across the Potomac River outside of D.C., and you ride the rural countryside, really, of Prince George's County and Charles County, Maryland. I was amazed the first time I rode it to see how little traffic is out there and how so many of those roads are country roads where you can really enjoy yourself, enjoy the sights, and not feel the threat of a lot of traffic around you. So those are the two events. You don't have to be in the greatest shape. We're not looking for people to set records here. The 5K is a timed event, but you run at your pace. and it's around Capitol Hill and the Memorial, and it's a wonderful route on a Sunday morning. Get out there and enjoy yourself. WTOP has been a great sponsor of ours. Hillary Howard has been a great friend and one of our celebrity sponsors, if you will. And we're having fun with this, but we're raising money and we're raising awareness about a great cause. So if you want to get out there, send a note to your friends, family, and colleagues to maybe sponsor you. Send a small donation. I'm up to close to $1,000 is my goal, and I'm getting there with the help of friends, family, and colleagues. I'm going to do the bike ride on Saturday, October 12th, out at National Harbor, and then I'm going to turn around the next day, and if my legs allow me, I'm going to actually do the 5K, and we call those people road warriors. So you can do both events if you like and feel up to it. And the bottom line is you can do it virtually as well. And any of our listeners that are not able to get to Washington, D.C. on October 12th and 13th, you can pick a site, a length at your and a date of your choosing and still participate in the event virtually wherever you may live and work. So I encourage everybody to participate. It's a great cause and a lot of fun.
So in the spirit of the fun part, as I sit here and decide whether I want to do the bike ride, are there any hills?
A couple hills, you know. This isn't going to be your most challenging bike ride ever. So, I mean, but for the pros, you know, you're going to get a little bit of a work in. For those like me that ride my bike twice a year, by the way, I was able to ride 60 miles last year, having ridden a bike twice a year. So if I can do it, I think that says that just about anybody that's in halfway decent shape can get out there and participate in the bike ride. And we've added the shorter distance this year, too, for those that may not want to do 55 miles, they can do a 30-mile bike ride, and most of the time it's going to be on flat roads.
Sounds like a great event. We're going to have to stop here to take our last break to hear from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up our discussion with Craig and Chris. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied. But today, GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said. It's a thought. But Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Could talk about some of the language.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and we are entering our last segment of the show. And, you know, Craig and Chris, it occurred to me as we were talking about the law enforcement ride and remember event that the Memorial Fund is hosting. You know, I know the event that both of you guys were at yesterday, you know, up in Boston, honored a lot of the folks who were involved in another race, the Boston Marathon race, and that terrible bombing that happened about a year ago, a little less than a year ago. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about that event last night.
Well, the law enforcement appreciation event that Chris organized for us and his colleagues there at the Federal Law Enforcement Officers Association was at Fenway Park. We do these sporting events all over the country. We go to the NFL. We do football games. Last year, I was on the field in Atlanta with Arthur Blank, the owner, and the chief of police in Atlanta, and the surviving daughter of an officer killed in the line of duty in Atlanta. And we paid a special tribute, an audio tribute and a video tribute to that officer. And we're doing more of those. And people can go to our website at lawmemorial.org to learn how to help pay for audio tributes to these fallen heroes. But we show these tributes at these events. Last night, for example, we had just a very stirring ceremony right before the game started. We had about 30 of us line up on the first baseline, and they introduced each of us to the crowd. And there were a number of law enforcement heroes there last night, but the ones that certainly got the biggest ovation and it resonated so well with the people in the stands were the officers who were involved in the firefight with the Boston Marathon terrorists when they were finally spotted and ultimately engaged in Watertown, Massachusetts. So we had the chief of the Watertown, Massachusetts Police Department, Ed DeVoe, was with us last night. He had four of his officers who were engaging those terrorist suspects, one of whom actually tackled one of the terrorists, the ones that one that ended up dying, because they had both emptied their weapons at each other within a space of about 8 feet. And finally, he charged the terrorist, tackled him, and they put the handcuffs on the older brother terrorist. And then the younger guy, as we may all remember from the story, got in the stolen SUV that they were driving, and he literally ran, tried to run over the officers. But what he ended up doing, the officers were able to dive for cover, and he ran over his own brother. And some people think that may have led to his brother's death, or certainly exacerbated the situation. His brother ended up dying on the street there, and the younger terrorist ended up escaping for a short while and was ultimately captured, as we all saw on television. But the bottom line is the Watertown officers were there. The Boston police officers, who also were involved in that firefight, were there, and as well as a couple of the Massachusetts state troopers who were involved in that situation. It was really a team effort, federal, state, and local officers working together, and all of them got to be properly recognized and honored last night.
Sounds like a wonderful event. In the few minutes that we have left, I just can't conclude a show about federal law enforcement without talking about the S word. And when I say the S word, I'm talking about sequestration. I say that because when I first heard it, I says, "What the hell does that mean?" And I had to run and look it up in a dictionary. So I'd like to give you both a chance to weigh in on the federal sequestration and how it's impacting the law enforcement community, or how it potentially could impact. And Chris, let me start with you. If you could tell us a little bit about what FLEO is doing.
Well, we have a very aggressive approach to the sequestration, as you can imagine, on behalf of our members. I'll be in D.C. a couple of days next week. President Adler is virtually on the Hill every day. You know, he lives in New York, but he's down in Washington, you know, fighting the fight and meeting with the congressional subcommittees in the House and Senate. Also meeting with the agency directors, trying to get a better handle on, you know, where the agencies stand. You know, we just recently finished our national conference for FLEO, and you know, this is such an important initiative for us to try and again educate, you know, the parties that are involved here, and say, hey, you know, do you understand that what the effect is going to be on federal law enforcement? I mean, there's been such serious cutbacks already in a lot of these law enforcement agencies, and then you compound it with the sequestration that's going on now, and, you know, will last for several years. And, you know, in my own little agency of NOAA, you know, we're down to I think a little over 100 agents, and you know, we're not going to be hiring anybody for quite a while. It's pervasive across the board. The second part of that too is the furloughs that may be attached to this. You know, it's very difficult to try and manage and be effective in law enforcement when your furlough days that could be coming up can impact your operations. And, you know, we will work diligently to try and get this resolved and have, you know, have Congress and have the agency directors work together and through FLEOA to try and minimize this, or at least, you know, make it so that federal law enforcement can be effective. And with that, I think, Craig, your comments on that.
Well, before that, if I can just make a quick comment, because the thing that's always puzzled me about this, and regardless of where you come down on politically on the sequestration, the thing that's always been alarming to me is how they announce you know, all these closings. You know, it's just you're announcing to the bad guys, you know, right. when we're going to be vulnerable, you know, and you know, it's sometimes you get so caught up in the political side of things, particularly here inside the Beltway, to do things in a certain way, to communicate things in a certain way for political reasons, that you lose sight of the bigger picture and the real mission.
And with Tony, that's just a real quick point on that. Again, in our natural resource world, if the resource is available and we're on a sequestration, on a furlough, you can bet there's going to be some pretty significant poaching going on. So it does have a huge impact all the way around.
I would add to that, there was a great quote that I think puts all this in some perspective. It was by a Virginia state senator a couple years ago when they were really cutting all federal, state, and local law enforcement budgets. And he was opposed to the idea. And he said very simply, when you cut education dollars, you end up with more kids in the classroom. When you cut law enforcement agency dollars, sometimes people die. And I think that really gets to the heart of what we're talking about. And certainly we saw it just the other day at the Navy Yard here in D.C., 12 people shot and killed by a crazed gunman. And if not for law enforcement stepping in and ending that siege of terror, many more lives would have been lost. And I was shocked, I must say, not only by that incident, but in what I read recently, hearing that the FBI headquarters may close for 10 days this year because of sequestration. I sit right across the street from the FBI headquarters, and I can tell you that thousands of people flock in that building every morning, and I cannot imagine that building being vacant or nearly vacant for 10 days out of the year. These people are doing an amazing amount of work trying to keep America safe from terrorism, from conventional crime, from drug dealers, you name it. And if we take our law enforcement officers off the street and tell them that they can't come to work on any particular day, what is that going to mean to our borders of the United States? The Border Patrol, for example, I mean, they're affected by sequestration. It's really ludicrous and sinful to think that we're going to, in our infinite wisdom, somehow just slash a percentage out of everybody's budget, including law enforcement, and expect nothing bad to happen. Because we've seen it time and time again. When you cut the budgets of law enforcement agency, not only do innocent people get injured and killed because of crime and terror, but law enforcement officers lose their lives or are seriously injured because their safety is affected as well. And I think we really have to do some deep soul searching, certainly our elected officials, and figure out the best way to accomplish these budget cuts without decimating the safety of our nation.
Well, it's just an administratively convenient decision rule that they make to slash it across the board. And, you know, whenever you make administratively convenient decisions, you ignore a lot of relevant factors, which is essentially what both of you guys are talking about. Well, that's going to be it. Thank you, Craig, and thank you, Chris. I want to give a quick shout out to Chris, who is retiring this year after 33 years of service and as a federal law enforcement officer. Congratulations, and I hope you go fishing.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you for joining us. Fed Talk is brought to you by attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Have a great weekend, everybody.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.